Thank you. Let me acknowledge the individuals that are sort of been actively involved in this work. Sarah Garreau, who had a baby roughly 6 weeks ago. Teddy is, I just got a picture before I came. And also Fizi Gazay. And Melanie Gazay is the director of the Birth Outcomes Initiative in South Carolina. I really don't have anything to disclose except that I chair the data committee for the Birth Outcomes Initiative, which is comprised of an interstate public-private partnership, which includes the Hospital Association, the Department of Health, as well as DAOTIS and a couple of other entities, and we are responsible for the data portion of the total Birth Outcomes Initiative, as well as the multiple feedback loops that go back to the entities. The South Carolina Birth Outcomes Initiative is a public-private partnership to improve the birth outcomes and reduce prematurity and infant mortality statewide. I want to sort of give you this perspective because it's rather large, and I think one of the hardest things from the perspective of doing this presentation is that I could probably talk you through all of the statistics and all of the various frameworks associated with multiple different strategies that are part of the Birth Outcomes Initiative. But I really want to talk about the policy piece of it because this is fairly exciting and to a very large extent, very new for South Carolina, and we're one of two states that have made significant improvement as a result of this public-private partnership. The Birth Outcome Initiative is comprehensive focus on improving maternal and child health and health care. It's specific focus on improving the quality and safety of care for every mom and baby. And there's a formal commitment from all South Carolina birthing hospitals. Now that's huge because what it means for us in South Carolina is that we started out ensuring that there was a commitment from all of the birthing hospitals as well as Blue Cross Blue Shield. Now, for us in South Carolina, what that means is that between Medicaid and Blue Cross Blue Shield, the private payer accounts for 82% of all births in the state. And so that is huge in terms of being bringing together this public-private partnership. Medicaid alone accounts for 82% payment for all teen pregnancies in the state. We have various different goals associated with it. There are a couple of things that I think are exciting about what we're doing. LARCS, 17P, expert screening, targeted resources around behavioral intervention, opioids, and some other things that we're very actively involved. But I want to talk today about the use of data to understand and inform birth outcomes and improve efforts, but also the implementing policies to decrease elective delivery rates prior to 39 weeks in all birthing hospitals. This partnership started out with really what is called the low-hanging fruit, and that is, could everyone across all of the different organizations, entities, including March of Dime, agree that the low-hanging fruit was 37, 38 weeks? And so there was a year in which all of the birthing hospitals agreed to reduce their unnecessary elective inductions. At the end of that year, Medicaid and Blue Cross Blue Shield came together and established a no payment without documentation associated with why those elective inductions were necessary. And so we don't have enough time for me to get into a lot of the statistics and the framework because we're still working through that. But I do think that when you look at some of these issues, you'll understand a little bit. NICU admission rates in South Carolina by payment type for this group was fairly consistent and high, and we are an all-payer data state. And so it really has allowed us to look at providing a feedback loop to all of the entities associating with the payment structure. When we look at the percent of low birth weight babies in South Carolina by payment type, this is not surprising. We know that Medicaid ranks higher than private pay for lots of different reasons. But what you see there is that bringing together that old payer data system allowed us to have ongoing discussions with all of the providers as it relates to those common intersections between Medicaid and private payers. Primary C-section. Now let's look at that, because we see now that there is a reverse there. We were concerned about the high C-section rate in our state. We were also concerned about the implications of that as it related to payment type. Then we looked at the rates of Medicaid rates for primary C-sections, inductions and readmissions. And what you see there again is sort of this trajectory that is skewed. We have a downturn in terms of inductions in 2009 and then back up again in significantly so in 2010. That pattern remained fairly steady, although again somewhat significant for primary C-sections. And then for readmissions in terms of C-sections, we looked at that. So one of the things that was critically important to us that in 2012, the state working with the March of Dimes and other groups asked hospitals voluntarily to reduce their rate of early deliveries. The rate of early deliveries in South Carolina Hospital fell 10% last year from 19% in 2011, and that's according to the LeapFrog data. That's not just us talking about it. That's incredibly significant, because what we're talking about here, and as you look at this area, one of the things that we've done a very good job of is in terms of that continuous data feedback loop, but not just from the perspective of talking about the census tracts or the common areas, but actually geographically mapping it and working with both private and public payers around where those resources are best needed. So if you take a look at these areas that are sort of crosshatched, those are the areas of Medicaid low birth weight babies across the state. Now, so what's the advantage of that? It means that for every single initiative associated with the total birth outcomes, whether that's 17P, whether that's ESPRT, whether that's behavioral health, whether that's early inductions, we're constantly looking at that intersection between geography and place and what we know about some of the key determinants in those geographical areas. The other thing that we've done is we geocode this at the ZZTA levels. And so that means that we're actually able to identify communities, which then allow us to bring in such factors as those resources within those communities and those community linkages, which also have led to, in South Carolina, the establishment of a community health workers outreach program, which is now available to some of these practices, OBGYN practices, and some of these areas that were identified. Now, I want to talk a little bit about the policy implication, because as you can see, this is the reduction or the percent of low birth weight babies. And the difference between 2011, when the hospital voluntarily agreed to reduce the rate, in 2012, when the no payment came into being, and then 2013. So the relative percentage drop for Medicaid is 35% change in that time period between 2011 quarter one and quarter one 2013. Again, highly significant. When we look at all payers in the state, there's a drop of 2% relative change. When we look at the percent of birth weights, and this is all South Carolina facilities, there's a relatively drop of all payers of a little over 13% between quarter one of 2011 and quarter one of 2013, and a little over 9% in Medicaid. The total inductions reductions in terms of 37, 38 weeks, again, you can see that downward trajectory. When we look at the relative percent improvement, it's 21% for all payers and 20% for Medicaid. When we look at the percent of early elective inductions at 37, 38 weeks, again, you can see sort of that downward trajectory. And it's important to look at sort of that difference between 2012 at the time that the policy was implemented and after the policy was implemented. Now, one of the things that is occurring now in South Carolina is that this initiative has started for 39, 40 weeks. Because what we saw was are creeping back up at 39, 40 weeks after the full implementation of the policy. And so now there's discussions among all of the partnerships relative to how does one address 39, 40 weeks. And that includes discussions such as payment. So if I have a hospital that is telling me that VBAC is more costly because it occurs after a set period of time, and if the difference between $1,500 versus $200, then those policies are being taken into consideration and looked at. And so again, what we looked at in terms of the relative improvement is this incredible trajectory. And this is the percent of NICU nursery level 3 or 4 stays among elective, non-induced deliveries at 37, 38 weeks. Now we know that unnecessary elective inductions lead to greater complications on the part of mom. It also leads to greater complications on the part of baby. And so the fact that we're reducing the NICU stays tells us something about the overall health of babies and that overall improvement. This again is elective inductions among elective deliveries and stays. So let me talk about implications for development of statewide policy driving birth outcomes. One of the things that is a phrase that I like to use a lot with our team is go slow to go fast. And so the partnership building and the bringing together of all of these stakeholders for a period of a year, meeting on a monthly basis, creating a vision council comprised of a 20-member key stakeholders, which included the data committee, by the way, as well as breaking this entire state partnership into key groups ranging from quality improvement, looking at behavioral health, looking at disparities or inequities, looking at such issues as communication and outreach, looking at such issues as where are the gaps, what are the lessons learned, what are we learning, was an incredibly important step. And that is, it took a year for this group to literally come together, build trust, come across with a common vision and sense of it. Our state has been asked multiple times, how did you get both Blue Cross Blue Shield and the Medicaid program to agree to stop non-payment? And more importantly, how did you get all of the hospitals to agree to non-payment? Well, it was a period of a year. First, it started out with a commitment. At the end of that year, when that commitment did not bear the fruit that everyone expected, then it was a lot easier to have discussions around non-payment. But there was an awful lot of education and training of support. And the 37, 38 weeks, for lack of a better term, was the low-hanging fruit. Everyone around the table could jointly agree to that, including our partners within the March of Dimes. Constant data feedback framed by a vision council comprised of stakeholders shapes and fosters policy changes. And this is critically important because across a variety of different projects and frameworks and interventions, the message from the Medicaid agency and Blue Cross Blue Shield was exactly the same. And I'll give you some example. There's an expert screening component of all of this, as well as information, referral, and brief intervention. And the training is done jointly between the Medicaid agency and Blue Cross Blue Shield. The codes associated with payments are exactly the same. And one of the reasons that the state moved to that is we did not want providers saying to us, you know, we have this code for private payer, we've got this code for Medicaid, it's incredibly confusing, and this pays more, therefore this is the code that we're going to default to. And so it was critically important to have the team at DHHS work with Medicaid agency, Department of Health and Human Services, work with Blue Cross Blue Shield in terms of that common language, that common outreach, common training to providers, and having everyone sitting at the table. I think the other thing that was critically important is that this team is chaired by two individuals, one representing the hospital association, the other representing the Medicaid agency. The data committee is co-chaired by myself, representing the university Medicaid policy and research component of our institute. And I've been involved with the Medicaid agency since 1997. I was a mere teenager. We won't go into age. But the bottom line is we've been working with their data, looking at policy and framing issues. And we were the only entity that has had unfettered access to all identified Medicaid data since 1997. It also formed a partnership with the health department. We link all of our data to birth records. We also link all of our data to hospital data. Why? Because all of this data is reported back to all of the hospitals on a quarterly basis using ACOG and JCOG definitions that look at exclusions. So not only do they look at the overall rates, but they also come back and look at exclusions, which are the basis for a lot of the things that we're doing. The Medicaid program has become, since this started, a predominantly a managed care program. So one of the things that the Medicaid agency did was tie incentives on withholds, or pay for performance, to their ability to move the needle one standard deviation relating to prenatal care, postpartum care, initiation around alcohol, adolescent well care, and a series of things that were reinforcing this overall birth outcomes initiative. And I know that a lot of the discussions that I have when I present the report card on behalf of the agency to the managed care plans is, and I oftentimes say to them, you know, the birth outcomes initiatives are tied to these particular indicators. And so therefore, if you are doing this part of the birth outcomes initiative, you're able to actually address the goal for the agency of one standard deviation improvement each and every single period of time. The agreement between public and private payers minimizes confusions and increases reporting accuracy. Our data committee looks at that data jointly. And we spend a great deal of time, social epidemiologists, biostatisticians, health policy researchers, and others sitting around the table making sure that if we question the data, there's a certain level of accuracy. The data will now become available to hospitals in an interactive platform. So they'll be able to go in using Tableau and actually look at, click, and look at what different what-if scenarios to look at how they can improve their own outcomes. And so that is something that again, we feel very strongly around. Exclusions in using the best evidence does not reduce elective induction rates. But I do think that the issue of non-payment and the issues of being able to adequately work with the hospitals and other providers, understanding the role of exclusions and being able to really incorporate that is critically important. Medicaid claims data by themselves does not allow us to attach those exclusions. It is this partnership that allows us to build that on the birth records as well as the hospital records, and this partnership around what constitutes the best way of providing that continuous feedback loop. And I think my time is up. Mm-hmm.